Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Welcome, everyone. This is Forrest and the Prepping Academy. We've got Uncle Buck and Jonathan Hollerman, special guest, Jonathan Hollerman tonight. He's in the house. And you know what? That song, every time I just kind of want to dance, and then I think people are watching me and maybe I probably shouldn't dance to the tune. But hey, welcome. What a special night tonight. I've got, you know, Uncle Buck's always, he's my host here, my co-host with the most.
Hello, but hello.
And we got special guests. We're just going to start off with Jonathan Hollerman. We're not going to put him in the green room, bring him up. We're just going to go. He just has released a book. We're going to be talking about that. And I've read the entire book. I read it in a whole weekend. I had to read it on an electronic device too, which that's hard to do. You ever read like that, Buck?
No, it's
difficult.
It's, the good news is you can highlight, right? You could do the highlight and then have it read back to you.
Yeah.
Kind of like an audiobook.
Yeah. So Jonathan Hollerman, we thank you so much for coming on. You just released your new book. I looked at the sales from the PrepperNet and it is kicking. I mean, I've released it out to everyone. I posted it, sent emails out to everyone. And this, right now I'm counting about 1.6 million copies have been sold. So, not that many. Hey, but welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Thanks so much for the email blast here over the weekend. It was great. Watch the book get up to number one in my secondary genres, and it got up to number two in survival preparedness on Amazon. So, couldn't quite get that number one spot. Was pretty frustrated, but, it'll get there eventually. So
absolutely it will. I know I would say PrepperNet, your first survival one, not survival one, survival theory, your first book, one of our groups, I know themselves bought 60 of them, and you're familiar with that group because you're working with that group now because they're going through your second book. So we've purchased a lot of books through you. I mean, but it's in my top five of all time best books in the survival genre, prepping genre. It's top five, your first one.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. It's, the first one had that was a number one bestseller there for about 2 or 3 months. This one's going to be, It was a decent chunk of time between releases. I think I had like 4 years here between Survival Theory 1, Survival Theory 2. And Survival Theory 2 is definitely a lot. It's a much heavier read. I believe it's the most important book that I've ever written that people need to read. But it's also the content, which we'll get into here in a bit, is a little bit more heavy.
Well, I want to thank you for serving. I want to get that out before. We're all three of us are veterans, which is pretty awesome. But thank you for serving. And you want to tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So, yeah, as a young buck, I was in the United States Air Force. I was a SEER specialist, SEER instructor. SEER stands for Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. Essentially, our job was to train pilots, air crew, and, you know, some special operations guys how to survive if they got shot down behind enemy lines, how to evade capture. And then if they were captured, we taught them anti-interrogation techniques and how to escape capture. So that was my military career. And a lot of people were like, oh, you know, survival, that correlates one-to-one over to prepping. And it does to a degree because it's always given me a mindset of preparedness and survival and the survival instinct, the survival mindset and the survival skill set also in the backwoods. But the biggest thing I took from Sears School was starvation, was hunger. Our first trip was in the mountains of Washington State in January. There were 6 feet of snow on the ground. I think the warmest day was like 5 degrees. For 23 days, they gave a goat and a small box of vegetables for 8 guys. And we went through that in like a week and a half, right? And it was, it was extreme. The psychological impact of starving, like literally your body eating itself. I was in peak physical, literally half the man I am today. Physical shape, no body fat, and I lost like 15 pounds on that trip. Mm-hmm. It was, by the end of that trip, I tell a story in Survival Theory too, like it's just kind of a personal thing. Like by the end, we all had our write in the rain tablets that we would take notes on in training. And every single person, the last two pages, we had lists of food that we were going to get when we got back to base. And that's all we talked about. That was literally the only topic of conversation was food. We would sit around the campfire at night and literally fantasize about food and bacon pizza. And you would scratch something off and you would put that in there and peanut M&Ms, you know, and we would just go back and forth, compare notes. And then, you know, that first night back to base, I remember, you know, getting those two large bacon and pepperoni pizzas from Domino's and a 1 pound bag of M&Ms and 2 liter Coke. And eating till I threw up, and then eating till I threw up multiple times in one night. It was pretty crazy. So that made a big impact, like the starvation side of it. And so later on in my career here, the last probably 7 or 8 years, I've kind of made that a lot of my focus. I've done a ton. I mean, I've read dozens of books on all kinds of biblical sized famines throughout the centuries, the Holodomor, the Chinese famine, the Warsaw ghettos and the Holocaust, the Bengal famine, Bosnia. I've got a whole row of books back here just on starvation. The Lucifer Effect by Philip Zimbardo, which is a book on how good people can do evil. That's a highly recommend. People need to understand that book as well. So when you add in all these factors on starvation, that was kind of my niche and my expertise. And that's kind of how I was brought into a lot of these organizations I'm in now.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, as far as moving into these companies now, like kind of what is it, who engages you, and then what do you typically talk about? I mean, we talked a little bit about starvation, but there's the trigger which causes the starvation, right? That like a EMP type event. But can you talk a little bit more about these companies and what you actually provide for service?
Oh, sure. So my personal company is Grid Down Consulting. You can find me at griddownconsulting.com. So for the last 10 years, I have worked with high net worth and super high net worth clients and helped them analyze existing family survival retreats. So I've done over 500 since I've started my company. I don't think anybody in the country or the world's done more than I have, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I've built a couple dozen survival retreats from the ground up, worked with different clients, varying sizes, some, you know, $500,000-$600,000, some multi-million dollar locations. So my primary business though is analyzing existing retreats. So I've been all over the country, all over the world, looking at existing survival retreats, seeing how people do things, making recommendations on off-grid power, security, things of that nature. So that's my personal company, griddownconsulting.com. With that said, based off survival theory success and kind of my experience doing that, it would have been 6 years ago now, maybe, the first Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, which is a wargaming operation. It's a joint services wargaming operations at Don LeMay Wargaming Institute in Louisiana there. And General Cross and Major Stockenberg, who were running that operation in 2019, they invited me to come and participate. And it was a very eye-opening experience. I knew the government and the military was not prepared for a nationwide grid down event, but it was extraordinary to the level of not ready, like literally nothing. And it's still that way today. To this day, there's no military plan. There's no government plan for a long-term grid down event in this country. No, nothing at FEMA, DHS has no plan, and it's just it was very, very eye-opening and concerning, right? To sit with 300 people from every alphabet agency, secret agencies. They were, you know, TS2 level meetings that were held there. I wasn't privy to those, but it was very frustrating. And then from there, I got involved with Tommy Waller over at the Center for Security Policy. Mm-hmm. Spent a couple of years with Impact America on the board of advisors, and recently I've taken a position as deputy director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. So all these movements are geared towards warning Congress and warning states that they need to take grid resiliency serious, grid hardening serious. It's America's Achilles heel, and if we lose the national electric grid through cyber, through physical attack, EMP or solar flare, it's lights out permanently. It's an end of civilization event. 90% of Americans are going to die. So right now, I can't, for 20 years, the Congressional EMP Commission has been trying to get Congress to spend the money. And we can get into the nuts and bolts if you want to, but it's a very complicated issue. There's no regulation. There's no regulatory authority over the electric utilities. They're the Wild West. They write their own security standards. They break their own security standards. When they do so, they're required to turn themselves in. They turn themselves into their own industry. Their own industry sets the fine. They pay the fine back into their own industry coffers. And then the civilian population through FOIA is not allowed to find out who's breaking what security standards. Yeah. So we need to know how well they're being enforced. And then, so you have NERC, which is the North American Energy Reliability Corporation, who oversees all of the industry and the standards and critical infrastructure standards and things like that. And then you have the federal department, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but they have no legislative authority. They tell NERC all the time, hey, you guys need to do this. You need to fix this. This is a vulnerability. And NERC can just be like, oh, yeah, we'll take care of that. And they never do. So, and then we find out that, like, I think 3 of the 4 FERC commissioners right now all are lawyers that came from NERC and the electric utility. The electric utility lobby is embedded in DHS. They're embedded in the DOE. It's a revolving door between industry and the government. So every time we get a bill up there in Congress to try and get it passed, it just gets crushed. The utility lobby, they've spent over $1.2 billion in lobbying just the federal level the last 10 years. They're fighting tooth and nail. They do not want regulated. And it's a very tough situation. And so we need more people to kind of get involved and help bring awareness to this movement. And I know I'm going to talk for a second, but I would highly recommend everybody go out and check out Grid Down, Power Up documentary by David Tice. Mm-hmm. It's a little over an hour long. It's a great icebreaker to break your relatives into this subject, and it lays out the threat. It's narrated by Dennis Quaid, and then he has a great take action page at the back end of his website on how to get involved and how to, you know, pressure your congressman and congresswoman to take this threat seriously.
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering 2 convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
So I want to back up just a little bit. We're going to go into more of what you just said for sure. So, I want to know a little bit more about you before we get into all that. because we're going to go there. We're going to go deep. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell everybody how I gained 5 pounds by reading your book. So you in the military, how did you get the prepper mindset? Was that before military, during military? And then when you got the mindset of survival, meaning surviving you and your family, how did you get involved into, because I mean, when you lead the military, you just don't go into the EMP commission and start, you know, socializing with, you know, Dr. Pry and all these big time thinkers and the former CIA director and all this, but you went from somehow a little country boy, I can imagine, not sure where you're from, through the military. And then all of a sudden you are with, you know, the CIA director, you're with, you know, Dr. Pry, all these very high level thinkers. How did that entire transaction happen?
Sure. So yeah, out of the military, you know, this, I wouldn't say I had a prepping mindset. In order to have a prepping mindset, you have to have a reason to prepare. Mm-hmm. If anybody's storing up food and water in their basement for no reason, they're kind of crazy, right? So there was a period of time there. I started a business. I had a company flipping houses, and I owned a couple businesses during that time period. But then I read a book called One Second After. I think this was back around 2006, if I remember correctly. It's right when it first came out, William Forshin. If you haven't read it, great book, by the way. And it was a really fascinating book. And I'm like, EMP, what the heck's an EMP? And just the analytical type person that I am, I had to dig, and I went and I read every EMP commission report. I read everything I could put my hands on and realized that this wasn't no some like sci-fi magic thing. This is real. This is a very, it's America's number one threat to this country. It's America's Achilles heel. And nobody was really talking about it. And to my opinion, nobody understood it. Because then I started reading other kind of what you would call EMP fiction books. And I grew very frustrated because a lot of the people that were writing EMP fiction, they grew up in the richest country in the world. They never starved a day in their life. They didn't understand the stories they were writing based around, you know, a year without electricity in this country or longer. They just didn't jive with my experience with hunger, right? And my experience with starvation and right, putting people in that environment, right? So what I did was I essentially said, you know what? I'm going to write my own book. Okay. Now this is a kid that hates English, right? I mean, I got a college degree, but I like, when I hand my book into my editor, like I know she cries every time I give her my book. Like,
I think we're a lot alike there.
Okay. So I wrote the first book, EMP Equipping Modern Patriots. Right. And, that's a fiction book. It was kind of laid out with some of my plans at the time and some of the things that I was working on and changed names of places and things like that. But, so I wrote that book thinking I'd sell 10 or 20 copies to my military buddies or, you know, somebody, you know, in there would buy. And you know, when I published it, I self-published and I sold started to sell like 10, 15 copies a day. I was like, hey, you know, that's pretty good. You know, that's pretty cool. You know, and I went to hunting camp for a week and a half. So it was around hunting season. I went to hunting camp, didn't have internet, kind of off grid. And towards the end there, I think we went to a restaurant or something. I pulled it up and I was selling like 150 copies a day. And then it just kept going up and up and up. And it ended up becoming a bestseller in post-apocalyptic and dystopian and genre and a couple others. So that book really, to be honest with you, put me on the map. And it's not because of my writing prowess. I am no Stephen Shakespeare. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, it's just a matter of, I think people resonated with the ideas that I was putting in the book. Okay. So that kind of put me on the map, man. That was 2007, 2008, maybe. I'm trying to remember, but it was a while back. It was 10, 15 years ago. So that put me on the map, and that started leading me. I started getting people reaching out to me saying, hey, can you help me prepare? Can you help me do this? And it kind of grew where I was just like helping by word of mouth here and there. And then eventually I started Grid Down Consulting about a decade ago. And then it just took off from there. And it's, you know, I've written three books in that fiction series now, and then Survival Theory 1, which was 6 or 7 years ago. When that hit, that really boosted my business, and it kind of took it to the level where I was flying all the time, I was gone all the time, and, you know, all these construction projects going, and I'm only one guy. So it was kind of tough on the family life there for a short time, and I decided to kind of take a step back from that. So now I only work with about 8 or 9 clients at a time. I only really work with, you know, clients that have the money to really, you know, pay for the things that need to be done, because and that's why I write Survival Theory 1 and 2, to kind of help people that are on a budget or can't afford a multi-million dollar retreat.
The poor people.
Kind of give them options, you know.
The poor people. That's the ones I work with.
Normal people.
Yeah, okay, the normal, that's the ones I work with. And thanks for giving me the, because everything's a you mean I got to buy a gun too?
So can you go a little bit into an EMP and describe the nature of an EMP? And I think even in the book, it goes by, and I'm probably saying the right words, but like levels, like an E1, an E2, or an E3. What is that? What are those? And then like, what does that do? What are the ramifications of an E1 versus an E2 versus an E3 EMP?
Okay. Sure. So E2 is similar to your standard lightning. So, I mean, most houses, E2 is not going to affect a whole lot because most stuff has lightning protection, or your home has lightning protection. So we're primarily going to focus on E1 and E3. Okay. So when an EMP, which is a nuclear weapon, and I'll discuss a super EMP because that's what most of our enemy nations have today. We've known about the effects of nuclear EMP detonating in the atmosphere since like 1981. And a lot of people really hold the MIL standard 188-125. They wave that around, say, I'm protected to this. Well, they don't realize that those standards are 45 years old now, and military has changed and increased those standards based on new information in the 2000s. We know that Russia and China and North Korea all have super EMP weapons, which are actually smaller nuclear weapons, but they're more focused and they're more directed gamma radiation back down to Earth. So it's detonated around 300 kilometers over the center of the country. They can be launched from a shipping container off the Gulf of Mexico, from a submarine. There's multiple ways if you were able to sneak a nuclear weapon in through the ports or through the coast somehow, you could put it on a weather balloon that you buy off Amazon, put a turkey timer on it and detonate it that way. I mean, it's not high tech. So a lot of people think that it's not a serious threat because, you know, we'll see North Korea launch it and it'll take 4 minutes to get here and we'll shoot it out of the sky. That's not how it's going to happen. It's going to happen from the Gulf of Mexico, and there's no missile defenses to stop it if somebody decided to do this to our country. So,
well, thanks for telling them. So,
all they know. It's,
oh, okay.
I have Dr. Peter Pry has. There's a book down here from the EMP Commission. In 2017, they released, I think, 17 reports. One of them is foreign views on EMP nuclear EMP attacks, and so it's got all the kind of the war doctrine from different countries. And they're, just so you know, this is first strike doctrine for every country. Electromagnetic warfare is the future of warfare. Mm-hmm. Taking out somebody's electric grid and all their communications and all their means of transportation and food delivery and all that, you take that out, you win the fight on minute one. The second that thing goes off, you've won the war. You don't even have to fight a war at that point. So so it's detonated around 300 kilometers above the Earth, okay? So then I think it's the troposphere that the gamma radiation, that when it goes through, it electrifies it. And there's two pulses that come. One is the E1. Okay, the E1 pulse is nanoseconds from coast to coast. Okay, it hits instantly with a crack. Okay, and at peak yield, right where the detonation happens, you get as high as 200 kilovolts per meter. At the coast, you're looking at probably 50 kilovolt per meter out at the coast. And that's enough to fry most small electronics. So that's going to attack all your microchips, which is in pretty much everything today, everything that we rely on. Now, that is a very difficult thing to test for. So a lot of times when people do testing for EMP hardness, they're talking about the E3 pulse, which I'll discuss in a second. E1 portion, yeah, you have to have a really big generator to produce 100,000 plus kilovolts per meter of E1. But that is going to be That's really devastating, okay? Because that's going to take out a lot of electronics. Right behind that is the E3 portion, and that's going to kind of attach itself to the Earth's magnetosphere and the ground waves and the rocks, and it's going to attach to long line transmission lines, all your distribution lines, anything with an antenna on it. It's just going to attach to that, and it's going to travel down. And basically, anything that they get fried by the E1, the E3 portion is going to come behind, and it's going to give it another big wall up there. And that lasts, I forget how long, I think it's the 1 to 2 seconds. It kind of fluctuates and it grows. And, you know, that's also very devastating. But at the end of the day, the biggest danger is to our electric distribution lines, our high voltage transformers. They take about 12 to 18 months to build. They come from South Korea and Germany, and actually now China. That's a whole nother topic. But and they take 12 to 18 months to build. So if they take out, whether, and it could be a solar flare, it could happen from the sun, you could do it through cyber attack with the right methods. They take out enough of our high voltage transformers, the first ones aren't getting here for a year at minimum, 12 months. I think right now with copper shortages, I think the earliest delivery for a high voltage transformer is 18 months. We don't build any here in this country. And even if we could build them here, we wouldn't have the electric grid to power the factory anyway. But the point is we're going, this country nationwide will go an entire year without electricity. What that means is you're looking at 90% of the American population dying the first year from disease, starvation, societal collapse. I mean, every aspect of human life today, every aspect of our life, food distribution, interstate trucking, computers, TV, radio, networking, banking system, our government, 99% of the military bases receive their electricity from civilian electric grid. They've already warned Congress. In the case of the civilian electric grid coming down, the military has 48 hours of backup diesel power generation on the average base. Okay. Cheyenne Mountain, our nuclear triad, they're protected. But outside of that, it's the military, and it's in the report that I have, the military runs out of food within 2 to 3 days, just like the American people. It's every man for themselves. There's no government plan. There's no military plan. It will dissolve into warlords and
Will my Amazon app will work on it? My Amazon app would still work on it.
No.
No? Oh.
The Amazon servers are going to be down. Silicon Valley is going to be down. No TV, no internet, no nothing.
Okay, I got a question. I'm not going to mention this individual's name, but you know who I'm talking about. States that it's not going to be as bad. And because he's using old technology, old, and we talked about this on the phone the other day, I believe we talked about it, that he was saying that he predicted 80% of the cars would still work after EMP. And he also said, you know, a lot of electronics would survive. You're saying with the bigger nukes now and a lot of that stuff is not really true anymore. And you were also, I want you to get into, because we're talking about that, you know, all this is these Faraday cages. Sometimes we see that people make are just about useless. So, right. Okay. I'm setting you up. I mean, that's what we were talking about the other day. Right. We need the truth. That's why we got you.
This is a very complicated topic, but I have been to most InfraGuard meetings. I've sat with, had one-on-one meetings with the engineers from the EMP commission, I'm not going to name names either, but some of the guys that wrote the original algorithms for the 1981 mil standard reports, and they're still doing military standard testing today. You know, when I bring up, I think the most popular EMP Faraday cage video on YouTube has 450,000 views at this point. It's a garbage can. I think it's like Mormon Prepper 101 or something. And you know, it's there's a weed whacker in the background. And
I watch that one.
Is putting a radio, battery powered radio down there, putting the lid on because it lost signal. He said that's EMP proof. And I actually showed that to one of the engineers from one of the big facilities, the military test facilities. They laughed out loud. They said, "Well, man, we spend all this money for military testing. We could have just got garbage cans to put stuff in." Here's the thing. Again, I mentioned briefly 188-125. It is still considered it's unclassified for a reason. Okay, the average Joe, you can go down there, you can download the EMP hardening standards. And so anytime that I see all these people, they're like, we're tested to military standards. Well, that standard is considerably lower. So that standard is 50 kilovolts per meter. Okay. We now know that the Russian Chinese have super EMPs that could produce up to 200 kilovolts per meter. Okay. And the military had to redo the hardening standards. Okay. I think you remember in the Obama administration, they spent, I think, $4 billion on Cheyenne Mountain, rehardening it and nuclear triad and some of our missile defense systems and stuff like that. So, but that's TS2. That you're like, I don't have access to that. Like, I know it exists, but nobody has access. And that's part of the problem with the electric industry. The utility industry is like, well, they don't have top secret clearances to find out what the military is hardening to now. So they're claiming, well, we can't do it anyway. But so I guess my point is you have to be very careful what you I would say. I would tell you that 95% of the EMP advice on YouTube is just wrong. Okay. Now, with that said, if you take a garbage can, line it with cardboard, make sure you have a good seal, you seal it up, you put some stuff in there. There's a very valid chance it could protect your stuff. Okay. But there's no guarantee that's not. So when I have clients that we build, get their bunkers and we put like chest style freezers that are from Holland Shielding or one of these big companies that build 100 plus decibel products for like actual real Faraday. I mean, they're $10,000 a piece. There's a reason why it's very expensive. If you want to do it yourself, the safest way to the most reliable where you can sleep at night knowing that you're 99.99% protected is 3/16 inch plate steel, double welded, and then die tested to make sure you don't have any penetrations in there. And then have a 100 plus decibel gasket, seamless gasket. So you have to get it custom made from like Holland Shielding. You don't just put four pieces down, you butt the ends. It's got to be a seamless gasket all the way around. Make sure you have good compression.
Are you sure you can test that with just an FM radio dropping it down there, that $10,000 Faraday cage?
That's how in they the cardboard test box. It?
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to get a signal, of
course. So you say that, we might need to have a like
let me finish one more thing. I realize 99% of your audience can't afford a $10,000 chest freezer to put their fancy electronics in. Okay, so nesting is good. Okay, you can buy the ESD bags, electrostatic bags, the Faraday bags. Okay, they're kind of like Mylar. Get them from a reputable company that has had them tested at a facility before. That'll get you 50 kilovolts per meter. And then you put that inside your garbage pan, your garbage bag or garbage can with your cardboard. You're probably good. Okay. So I say probably because it depends. So we were talking about the pulse. If we get one nuclear EMP over the center of Oklahoma, yeah, you're right. 80% of the cars are probably going to survive on the east and west coast, okay? But they may hit us with multiple. That's the reason it's hard to answer. People are like, well, what do I need to protect myself? It depends, right? If you're at ground zero, directly below where you just took a gut punch up in the atmosphere, which doesn't affect you personally, you could get as much as 200 kilovolts per meter. Russia said that we have EMP weaponry that can wipe out your most hardened protected sites. Okay. Whether they do or don't, that's a different question. But I guess my point is I want to be honest with my clients. I want to be honest with people. I don't want to give them false hope and regurgitate the same stuff that all the other, wing nuts on the preposphere are kind of regurgitating. So there's no 100% guarantee. Don't trust your life unless you've actually got the, like I said, the 3/16 inch steel box or buy it from a reputable company. So I wouldn't have something that my life depended on. But you mentioned cars earlier. So we don't know. So, I actually had this conversation with Dr. Pry, probably a month before he passed away on my last call. During the EMP commission testing in 2004, the newest vehicle they tested, I think there was 13 cars, was to 2002. They were also told, because they were on a budget, not to try and break the cars, okay? So they didn't really wallop them as hard as they could have probably walloped them at the time. We're also talking 20 plus year older cars. And if you know anything about cars today, the amount of microchips that are in a car is astronomical. You know, if your computer in your car doesn't work, it ain't limping anywhere. It's not going anywhere. Your suspension, everything's controlled by microchips. With that said, because of that, there's more RF shielding in newer cars. So what hasn't happened is they haven't tested civilian cars. They've tested some tractor trailers here in recent years with decent success, but the civilian cars have not been tested for EMP. So it is literally a guessing game on what percentage, but I would think 30 to 40% of cars dying on the road, maybe 10% of those would be able to get them restarted. But I think 20 to 30% of cars dying on the road is a realistic number. With that said, most major cities, if you have 20% on the road die on the road where they're at, it's gridlock traffic. It's a parking lot. You're not, you know, in rural areas, not so much of a problem, but the other thing is even if you have a working car, none of the gas pumps in this country work. Okay. Interstate trucking isn't functioning. That's going to be down within a day. You know, once the trucks get to their destination, even if they finish their routes, no one's gonna be driving across country delivering food or diesel or anything like that. So you basically, you know, if your car does run, you better use it to get out of Dodge.
Meaning get out of the cities, right? Get out of the cities. Yeah. You stress that quite a bit in the book, like get out of the cities. There's no good situation. I don't care how good of a prepper you are. That this is just an awful, awful, awful situation. You mentioned a lot in the book on like mindset, like where your head needs to be in the event this does happen. Pray to God it doesn't, but in the event it does, how important is that mindset and being able to adapt, adjust, overcome to just whatever gets thrown at you? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Hello and welcome to the Waking Up to Grace podcast, where we celebrate and explore the finished work of our Lord, Jesus Christ. The Waking Up to Grace podcast can be found on every major platform. And now, here's Lenny.
Yeah, the OODA loop. Yeah, a kind of a common philosophy, a kind of a common mindset in preparedness is always just start easy. You know what I mean? Get some bottled water, buy a couple cases of MREs in Mountain House, buy some candles, right? Prepare for the next hurricane. Start for something simple and then slowly work your way up to preparing for the next big thing and then the next bigger thing. And you'll never get to EMP. Okay. Preparing for an EMP or a grid down event is extremely difficult. And I can't stress it enough. It's going to be extremely difficult when 90% of the population is starving to death, dying, killing each other. It's going to be very difficult to survive that scenario. A little bit of luck. Okay. Planning goes a long way. If you have a location tucked away and you can avoid people for a year, that's your best chance of living. But kind of to go back and answer your question, my philosophy is you have to wrap your brain around the worst case scenario. Even if you can't afford to build a retreat, wrap your brain around what life looks like after a nationwide grid down event. Because you could get that from a serious pandemic, not this thing that we just experienced. I'm talking about one of the other ones that came from the same lab that had a 20% or a 40% death rate. Not a 0.03% death rate. When your kids start dropping dead, you ain't gonna have to shut the country down. Ain't nobody going to work. Nobody's going in anywhere if you have a 20% chance of dying from this thing, young or old, right? So that could shut down the country, and shut down interstate trucking, and shut down the everything. So I guess my point is if you're prepared to mentally. Prepared and you come up with a game plan and you prepare to survive an extended long-term scenario, any of these other things are going to be a breeze. But I see so many people like they hear an interview like this. They hear me, you know, talking about the end of days, and they're freaked out, and they go out and they do their own research and like, holy cow, this nut job was actually real and this is a serious threat. Next thing you know, they run out and they start spending their cash in their kids' college fund and buying a whole bunch of stuff that, and they're buying the wrong stuff, and they're listening to people that don't know what they're talking about on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Because they've got an expensive camera and they're funny and they have a good personality and they make high quality content, and you know, YouTube pushes them up their algorithm. But I mean, I've literally had conversations with, like, I want to be careful, I don't want to dime this guy out, but he had the top website for preparedness. We'll call it bug out bag gear and stuff like that. The number one website for that was going back and forth. He wanted to do some joint like advertising, and you know, I saw some of the stuff he was recommending. One of them was a Becker, was a BK2 K-bar knife, which is, it's a fantastic knife. I actually own that knife, but I mean, it's a pig sticker. It's 18 ounces. It's a quarter inch thick. Mm-hmm. And he was like stabbing oil drums and oil barrels and saying, this is the best, you know, prepper knife ever. But, and I was just kind of like, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but you know, I could literally for 18 ounces, I could carry a cold steel SRK and a silky saw and get a lot more done with 18 mm-hmm. ounces than mm-hmm. that big pig sticker you got. You don't, but anyways, so I asked yep. him, I said, you know, have you, you know, and he was like trying to chop down saplings with a knife. I'm like, you're using the wrong tool for the job there, dude. You know, and so like, he was batoning or whatever he wanted to call it. I don't know. But I asked him, I was like, you know, what's your background? And he was like, literally, I've never been camping. Like I stayed, he literally said, I stayed at a Holiday Inn once. Like, he's just a great marketer. I mean, he stepped into this industry, and you can read on Vice and different places. There are ghostwriters. There are a lot of people writing in this space that literally think we're a bunch of kooks and a bunch of weirdos. But they make money because it's a niche
right.
market.
It's a business. Yep.
It's a business. Yep.
So I remember 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, you were a keynote speaker up in the mountains of North Carolina, and we went out to eat, and in the parking lot, we stood for hours. I mean, hours afterwards. I don't know what time it was 4 o'clock. It was very late.
We closed the restaurant, the bar down first.
Yeah, that was earlier. And we stood there in the parking lot. It was me, you and Charlie Hogwood.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we stood there and we had some of the best conversation ever. After, when I got home, you know, that evening, whatever time it was in the morning, I couldn't figure out am I depressed? Am I? Because all we talked about was what would really happen if this stuff went down. And we, I mean, I don't know. I won't say that I was the intelligent guy there, but it was one of the most fascinating conversations. Three guys that I would say, I mean, I'm making this up, but 60% of all consulting in America, which groups were right there, because Charlie has done, I don't know, 300-400 groups. I've done several, and you've done what you've done. And I was thinking, wow, this is the three right here that I know of that have done more consulting than anyone else when it comes to putting together groups. But man, it was a fascinating night. But I know that I think we didn't even bring chairs out, did we? We just stood there, and yeah. I just know that we had to go back, be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, it's almost getting light out. With that said, your first book, Survival Theory One, is in my top five books of all times. And that's put up against, Joe and Amy Alton's medical book. You just got to have that. That's a book you've got to have. And also the SAS, survival handbook, you know, that book. Everyone needs that book. Your Survival Theory One is one of them books because it's the mindset in there. You do put tools in that one, a little bit different book than your second one, you know, things to buy and things. But one of the things I called you after I read the first one, I said, you're a brother from another mother, because everyone, all preppers, all they do is talk about guns and running. And you said in that book, you know, when you're in a gunfight behind you, or the people you're protecting. So every bullet miss, it goes up and hits them or the house, or the property or the things you're doing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy gets it. So Survival Theory 2, a little bit different book. And I think I text you or told you when I read the first, we'll say third of the book, I gained 5 pounds because you give the most, you give facts. People don't work with facts. You were given facts about starvation, about countries or, when they lose their food supply and people starve. And, you know, you even mentioned, and I don't know what's country this, they were eating mud, mm-hmm. and then they were and they were softening their shoes or leather and eating the leather, and I'm like, I gotta eat. And so I gained 5 pounds, but that is some serious information, and people don't realize, and that's why I told you, even in my quote for you, that is the truth that people need to understand. If 90% of the people in America were to pass away because of hunger and disease, that is something that people just don't get.
So it's that is the God's honest truth is I am not popular. I am not the guy, the upbeat guy that everybody. You know, when I get done giving a presentation, people want to like go take a hard
break. We're gonna all die.
You know, like I'm not a ray of sunshine. I'm a one trick pony because this is kind of my wheelhouse, and I'm trying. And you've been alongside with me trying to stream this mm-hmm. from the rooftops. Is that most? I mean, 99.99% of Americans do not realize the gravity of a nationwide grid down a threat, the likelihood. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. Mm-hmm. I was in Texas last week with Senator Bob Hall trying to get legislation through in Texas. And I'm telling you, I'm fighting the fight. I'm working with these guys. I don't know that it's going to happen. So, so 99% of people don't realize that you could have a grid down event for more than a year. Like, no water, no nothing, no food, no anything, right? Mm-hmm. They don't even realize that's a possibility. They just assume a government somewhere, some man's fixing it somewhere, someone's doing something, okay? And of the people, so my point being, of the people, the 1% of the population in the prepping community that understand that this is a serious threat, it's a realistic threat, it's a common threat that could happen, and they need to take it seriously. They don't understand the ramifications because of EMP prepper fiction, some of the most popular authors out there, I'm not going to name names, Hollywood. And I think most of the EMP prepper fiction guys get their storylines from The Walking Dead and, you know, the latest Hollywood blockbuster on prepping, where there's always a military box truck coming down the road, passing out MREs or something, okay? It's never going to happen, right? It's going to fall apart so much faster. I think one of the most... The reason I started my first book, remember I said I was reading bad stuff? I think one of the mm-hmm. stories... it was in a city in suburbia, and it was 5 days after the EMP hit, right? No electricity. 5 days later, him and his next door neighbor, they had this like neighborhood group, but like nobody had any food except this guy. So they went down to the grocery store, and the manager had a desk and a cash register outside, and there was a police officer standing next to him, and they were letting two people in at a time to only buy $50 worth of stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, this just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, a manager has 5 days in. There's got to be rioting and looting at that point, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
That manager, there's no such thing as money anymore, right? That manager has no vested interest in that store. She's a 9-to-5 employee. She probably doesn't have health insurance. You know what I mean? The police officers, they have no way to drive their cars. Their radios don't work. Their prisons don't work. Even if they could arrest somebody, they have to walk them back to the precinct. Okay, and then there's no judge to call to get them out of jail. It's just the police are going to throw up their hands after day one or day two and go home when things fall apart. Like, no one's going to be standing outside. That grocery store is looted days mm-hmm. before that, right? The manager and the police officer would be two of the people looting the grocery store the day before. Okay, so these are the things that, like, I just people don't understand. I mean, We live in the richest country in the world. It's called normalcy bias. It's hard to take yourself out of your current life. And that's part of what Survival Theory 2 talks about is, you know, stepping outside of the fact that you drive your car to work. Let's say you walk to work in New York City, you bump into somebody on the street, you talk to them, you have conversations. People are sane. Nobody's trying to scope you out to kill you for your last, you know, food because their kid's dying on the couch back home and they haven't been able to get their kid food for 2 weeks. Like, these concepts are so foreign to Americans, right? Even our grandparents grew up with electricity, for goodness sake. The life skills that you need to survive without electricity, they're gone. They're gone. I mean, they are. I think people just, they think, they get an idea of like Katrina. That's what's in their brain, right? It's in their brain that it's like Katrina. Somebody's going to fix it. Somehow we're going to bootstrap. Some smart people up in Silicon Valley or DC are going to fix the problem, and it's not going to happen. It's literally fundamentally another great book. And I know you like this one too, Forth, is The Dark Secrets of SHTF by Selko Begovic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Must read that. He lived in a city that was surrounded by the enemy to cut the power. He basically lived in a grid down event for about a year, and how that modern city broke down street by street, neighbor. It was basically family by family, and little tiny groups surviving, fighting every other little group until they killed off all the other groups. They joined and essentially developed into like multiple warlords running each city. Women had to, single women that didn't have the guns or the ability, they had to use whatever resources they had to them to align themselves to a group. There's things you don't want to think about, talk about, that don't get in the Hollywood movie.
And that was real.
Yeah, it's real.
Happened.
Yeah, he's got some stories in there about stuff like that. And it's tough to read, and it's not something that you want to, read to your kids to put them to bed. It's stuff that people need to read because it's historical, like it's fact. Right. So I guess the last point I'll make is like all those stories. So at the end of the, I present the evidence, I present the scientific data, I present Minnesota starvation experiment, I go through Philip Zimbardo's studies, Milgram's, I go through like these different, the effects of starvation physiologically on the body and psychologically on the body. Then I do the historical data. Right after that, I have a section where I break down, and just so you know, we were talking about this before we came on here, those aren't the worst stories from those books, not even by far, because some of them were so extreme, I was like, some people, there's going to be some women reading this too, I don't want to push, but if you read a great one, Red Famine by Ann Applebaum, Mao's Great Famine is another great book. If you read these historical accounts, what you will come to realize, and what I kind of put in that last section where I tie it all together, is one, the people that lived through all these historical famines had life skills Americans don't have today. They knew that you had to boil water. They knew how to grow potatoes. They knew how to store potatoes. They knew how to, they knew what stuff in the forest that you could eat, because most of the people in Ukraine and China had hard times before. They had, they had the hand gardening tools. They understood these concepts. So one, they had life skills that we don't have. Two, their work ethic was so far beyond what we have today. The entitlement mentality, a lot of these people today are just going to crawl up in a ball and cry in their closet. Okay. Three, they had, I would say, a community, or like their community were tight. They were tight-knit communities, neighbors looking out for neighbors. And like nobody talks to anybody. Everybody's on TV or Facebook or something. Nobody knows their neighbors like they used to. Okay. And then the religious aspects of it. Most of these countries were very religious. Okay. And they had, they weren't like, hey, everybody has your own truth, your truth, my truth. That's going to lead to a disaster in this kind of scenario. Right. Their morality was tied to their faith. Okay. Which made it more static and more strong. Okay. So you take all these things, and what I discovered, and kind of what I presented, if we have a grid down attack or a grid down event in America that lasts a year, it's going to be far worse than all those horrible stories that you read, all of them. Because one, you look at the Holodomor in Ukraine, and you look at the Chinese famine. Both those situations were extreme starvation, extreme human desperation, but there was still rule of law. Stalin and Mao, I mean, if you were caught sneaking into a city to get food, or if you were caught hoarding food, it was a death penalty. Yeah, like you were put to death for breaking any of these laws by stealing or holding back food that you're supposed to be giving up or anything like that. So the rule of law was still in existence. There were still judges. There were still courts. So some of the even more crazy atrocities that could have happened in those areas didn't, because people were afraid of getting caught, right? Mm-hmm. So you had rule of law. And if you look at Bosnia and, you know, Selko Begovic and his situation, you didn't have as high level of starvation. You still had starvation. People were still eating maggoty food that they would find in refrigerators, but they got the occasional food drop. The warlord snuck some food in once in a while, and they were able to barter for it. That, you know, so starvation was lower, but there was no rule of law. And you can look at the, on the flip side, crazy atrocities that happen when you don't have rule of law. In America, in this type of situation, there's no police, no fire, no military, no government, no food, no water, no information, no government, you know, TV shows saying, hey, everybody stay calm, we're working on the problem. None of that stuff works. So it just, everything that, it just stops. It's a continental time machine. It takes us back 200 years, and we don't have the supplies, the knowledge, or the life skills to live that way anymore.
So when you say this to, right, you're speaking with some influential people that could pass legislation that could help harden the grid. You lay all these facts out, historical references. I mean, what is their hang up? What is their pushback? Is it just like, hey, this is Walking Dead fairy tale stuff. This is never going to happen. Like, what are you hearing from these folks that you're pitching this to see if they could do something legislatively?
Okay, so see if I can lay this out. It's a little complicated. So I laid out how FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, oversees NERC. As of right now, the electric utility industry is the only industry in America that has no federal oversight. Okay, if you get on a plane, you trust the FAA, you know, is looking after those planes and it's safe to fly. When you buy something off the shelf, the FDA has looked at that food. You buy a drug, you know, the you buy a car, it has to have seat belts. Okay, I am a libertarian. I'm a small government guy, but there are certain rules for government that make sense. And making sure their electric grid continues to function when every aspect of human life, you know, that's a big one, right? But it's the one industry that's completely not regulated. I mean, they're completely unregulated, okay? And I mean completely. They do whatever they want to do. And they give a lot of lip service, and they have their lawyers craft certain verbiage. It sounds like they're doing a whole lot. They're doing a lot with cyber right now. They're doing a lot with cyber, but the SCADA equipment, inside the equipment, they have done nothing with that or any testing on that. So basically what you have, okay, let's look at Texas. What was it? I think 245 people died in Texas during the ice storm, okay, recently. If I remember, I think it was 243 people died, okay? A lot of people don't realize that same thing happened in 1981, okay? They had an ice storm in 1981, lost power, and a bunch of people died. Okay, and everybody just assumed, wow, a bunch of people died, man, they're gonna take it serious now, they're gonna fix this, right? And they never fixed it, okay? And then it happened again. To put it in perspective, the great Northeast blackout here, what was it, a decade ago or a little bit longer than that, a bunch of people died there too, was caused, I think it was like 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago now, but it was caused by a down limb. One limb falling online, shorting something out, and it cascaded, boom, the whole thing goes down. So the FERC, which has a regulatory authority, told NERC, hey, you need to come up with a solid vegetation plan for your companies. Took them eight years to come up with a vegetation plan, which we don't even know how it's enforced at this point. We're not allowed to see who's breaking it or not. So if it takes them 8 years to come up with a vegetation plan, we're talking about them protecting against, you know, an electromagnetic pulse, okay? It's a very complicated thing. They don't want to spend the money. They want the government to pay for it. The problem is the government will pay for it, but the government, if they pay for it, they want to be able to look in and make sure you're spending this $10 billion to fix this stuff. And right now,
accountability.
Accountability, exactly right. So the problem is one, they don't want the government having that authority, because that opens all kinds of boxes now. Because now the government could be looking into all kinds of things. Because, again, there's 3,000 utility companies. They kind of do whatever they want to do, okay? Some are real big on security. Duke Energy's real. I think Duke Energy. I don't want to start saying names, but you know, but some of them like have terrible standards. They don't do anything. They're messing everything up. But we're not allowed to low because it's national security stuff, right? And so what happens in Texas? And you know, the big thing is if that legislation got passed, all of a sudden, for that to have happened, something had to have been broken or not done. Now you open the door to lawsuits. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right now there's 240 people. They don't, it's an act of God, you know, you can't sue them for this stuff. You know, this stuff should have been fixed decades ago. Right. But they don't want those things. So they fight tooth and nail. Michael Mabee, if you Google Michael Mabee, Grid Security Now, he's the tip of the spear. I think thousands of FOIA requests he's filled out. He's got a lawsuit against utilities right now trying to get information. He's got a lawsuit, I think FERC or NERC right now trying to get information from them. He's put out so much, he's discovered so much stuff in his research, Command Sergeant Major Michael Mabee. And it's just, at the end of the day, $1.2 billion. They spend more lobbying money at the federal government than any other industry outside pharmaceuticals. They spend more money in D.C. than big oil. Okay, they don't want regulated. They're a huge industry. They're big money behind them. So little guys like us, every time that, you know, the SHIELD Act, the GRID Act, there's been multiple things that have come and they've gotten close in different states and at the federal government and a big, you know, couple dozen, you know, $4,000 suits come walking into the room and they crush these bills every time. They never make it out of committee.
You know, I would challenge our listeners to, I know this report was is an old report, but it was called the EMP Commission. What's the actual document that they produced?
Congressional EMP Commission report to Congress, 2004, 2008. The big ones, the updated ones are 2017. Okay. The foreign views, chairman's report. I think there's 17 reports on or 13 reports in 2017.
But I want people to know that we, the former CIA agent, what's his name? The head of CIA.
Woozy
was on this, and what's the congressman from
Ron Johnson? We've got a Vet Clark in New York.
I mean, this stuff isn't fantasy.
But there's three or four.
Well, I want people to know that this 90 percentile that this the report talks about will die. These are high level people in our government, and you know them, their name. I mean, this isn't these crazy people at a MIT. These are ex-CIA. These are congressmen. These are scientists. These are some of the smartest people. Put out this report. If the grid goes down, 90% of the people will die, and that's kind of scary. My question to you is, what if the Southeast goes down for 30 days? I mean, I've seen the video on YouTube. One of the best videos I've seen is called, I think it's called 70, or is it 9 Mils to Anarchy?
Nine Mils to Anarchy. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. It has historically about people losing food, but could it be possible that just sections of the power grid go down for extended period of times?
Probably not.
Okay.
Through cyber, they could. I mean, you've got three power grids. You've got the Eastern Interconnect, the Western Interconnect in Texas. Okay. And the Eastern one and the Western go up into Canada. Texas goes down to Mexico. The problem is they're so tied. Because of new carbon standards, we're shutting down coal power plants and natural gas power plants. We're building electric panel or solar panel farms and wind farms, which do not have the reliability that these other sources do. We're forcing more electric cars into the electric grid, which is just, it's ludicrous that there's no way we're going to have the capacity for that if they keep expanding the level they are. We're already talking about rolling blackouts are probably becoming more common because of the, everything's tied together. I mean, we're operating at peak efficiency. And to make it more efficient, it requires more microchips and computers in the grid, okay, which makes it more vulnerable, right? So you hear the term smart grid. We keep making the grid smarter, 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 but it's making it more and more and more and more vulnerable to
more connected
scenarios.
Okay.
What's the probability, man? What is the probability? This is the question I've been dying to ask for the past hour. Like, what is the probability that this event occurs? And then I know I'm putting you on the spot on this, man. That's probably not fair. But like, we got a lot of nation state actors out there that don't like us. What would be a time frame, right? The probability and like when would this,
the day
this
and hour happen? Would
the
be
day
great.
And the hour, yeah, yeah. So where the sun is.
So I'm probably on the outside of this, okay. But I've also, man, I've been studying this for 15 years. Every, you know, inside and out, okay. This is my personal opinion. This isn't from the U.S. Task Force on National Homeland Security, which I'm with. Okay, this is my personal opinion. I think it's 80% in the next 20 years. I think it's 80%. So if you were just to say, what's the probability of EMP attack? I would say 40%. Okay, maybe 30% in the next 20 years. Okay. NASA says that, I mean, we're 50 years past due for a Carrington-level solar flare or CME. One just a couple years ago. 2012,
we missed it.
Yeah, just barely missed Earth, and NASA didn't tell us till like...
Yeah, 9 days.
Nobody did till... They're not going to tell you ahead of time. They're not going to tell you, hey, the world's ending in a day and a half. They're going to let it happen. See if it happens.
So hang on real quick. I want people to understand. I think it was in 2012. This CME, which is we'll call it a solar storm, left the sun. And as we're rotating, we literally miss the huge storm, I think, by 9 days. I think that's correct. 9 days. And if we would have gone through that, it would have been devastation. To almost
whole northern hemisphere would have been without power. Whole northern hemisphere, all the way around the globe.
And people, I mean, look that up on NASA. Don't take what we say. I mean, just look it up. And even NASA and all the science journals says we met. I mean, 9 days from a lot of people dying and a lot of things changing, but we missed it. Thank goodness.
So NASA came out here a couple of years ago and said 12% per decade is a chance for a massive solar flare. CME hitting Earth. Mm-hmm. And then recently some other scientists came out and said it's actually double that. So probably 24% per decade that we're going to get hit at some point. Because we're 100 years past due for a big solar storm. We've just been lucky. Quebec, 89 was a decent one, but we're due for a big one. And it's just a matter of time till one of them hits. And then we have that solar flare, EMP, every Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, Pakistan, every nuclear nation, EMP attack is first strike. It's first strike attack at this point. It's not like something and most countries consider it cyber warfare because you don't detonate a nuclear bomb on the planet. You don't blow up a city. Nobody gets hit with any radiation. You don't kill a single person. Iran actually considers this Sharia compliant because they don't kill a single American. They just detonate something up in the atmosphere, okay? And they say that America, our own arrogance, we kill ourselves because of our reliance on technology and electricity. So they consider it Sharia compliant. North Korea has two satellites that circle the Earth twice a day. At just happens to be 300 kilometers, I think it is, above the Earth's surface that's never sent a single signal back to North Korea. So we believe those both have nuclear bombs on them that could be detonated.
Did we lose them?
I hope not.
I think we may have. This stuff's scary, though, isn't it?
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
You still there?
Yeah, we're here. Yeah, yes, you are. North Korea is trying to get you to stop talking about it.
Okay, here we go. I'm back.
Okay,
you guys lost me.
North Korea. All about North Korea, and then it all went.
Yeah,
went,
okay. So they heard it.
Stopping you, yeah.
They're on to you.
So then you have the physical attacks. We've seen that in North Carolina.
Yeah.
We've seen that on the West Coast. We've seen that increasing lately. I could get in depth on that. North Korea, Metcalf substation, we have no idea who did either one of those attacks. They're still out at large. And, you know, and then the last one is cyber. So I think cyber's a big, huge realm. Joe Weiss applied science. You know, he's done a lot of work with this. He comes from inside the industry. He talks all the time how the high voltage transformers are very, very vulnerable from the inside out. We have artificial intelligence, ChatGPT. I mean, I'm sure you guys have been following that. The craziness, how fast that's developing. We've got quantum computers, which are coming around the corner. They're coming faster than anybody's really telling you. That's going to be coming in the next 2 or 3 years. So we have this war in Ukraine. We've got China, who's going to be taking Taiwan here in the next year or two. It's not like we can kick them out of SWIFT.
Yep.
That ain't going to work. So we've got... There's world war implications, and if you get a chance, General Stephen Quast, just absolute patriot, has a Hillsdale speech where he talks about the future of warfare is in the electromagnetic spectrum. America's still fighting the last war. We're still trying to build the fastest airplane, the biggest aircraft carrier, you know, the strongest tank. When these other countries, I mean, let's just look at Ukraine. You have a big military powerhouse of Russia, and they're being defeated with drones and advanced technology that they're getting supplied. Mm-hmm. 2 years before that, as I think it was Azerbaijan and maybe Uzbekistan, like it's just two little tiny countries fought a war like 2 or 3 years ago. It's fascinating to check because the one country had Russia's backing. They had jets, tanks, you know, all kinds of artillery. This other little country was super poor. All they had a fraction of the military forces. They went to Turkey, bought a bunch of drones from Turkey, and in 2 days they defeated this other country that was way bigger than them, way more military, and like just like 2 days crushed them with advanced technology. So that's the future of warfare: cyber attacks, taking down countries' infrastructures, EMP attacks. That's the future, and unfortunately, we're like not catching on.
I'm ready to start drinking whiskey.
I'm a ray of sunshine.
You start drinking whiskey.
Let's break out the whiskey.
So this book, great book, by the way, and thank you. You asked me to write a quote for it, and I mean, it was hard to word the quote because it was so serious. The book is a lot of truth, and I mean, it's a great book. I know PrepperNet, one of our groups have already bought a bunch of copies from you, or they're trying to, like 50 copies, I believe, but this will be a book that will be talked about for the ages because it's the truth about what every prepper thinks about in their mind and they need to know. And they want to know the truth. It's just, we got to get people to tell them the truth. And you started the campaign. You're plowing ahead. So anything else you want to ask Uncle Buck?
No, this is great. Yeah. For those of you that are listening, it's called Survival Theory 2. Take a look at it. It's on Amazon. Buy it, read it. Be forewarned, the first 1/3 is pretty intense, but there's a lot of good nuggets there towards the second third of what to do and how best to prepare and thinking with the worst case possible scenario. So you're prepared for anything that comes below that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one thing I would recommend is don't dismiss it out of pocket. Okay. So if you read Survival Theory 2, I think you're going to be hard pressed to fight against the logic and the fact and the historical data that I put in there. Okay. But it's a common thing. There's a whole industry of what's called kind of urban prepping. Now, if you're talking about a little 2 week scenario or something like that, absolutely, that's great. But if you're talking about extended long-term grid down event, extended, you know, societal collapse, pandemic level event, and you're you have to take the advice that I'm putting in this book seriously. Don't bury your head in the sand, because that's a common thing. It's like, wow, like this is flies in the face that everything that all these other preppers have been telling me on YouTube and the fiction that I read. You know, this guy's like, this thing's like up here, and most of these guys down here, I can wrap my head around it. You know, when bad things happen in the books or in the movies, it's always the bad guy doing the bad thing. It's not just some blue-collar guy whose daughter is dying of starvation and will do anything to get that child some food, include kill his neighbor who he's been friends with for the last 10 years, okay? So the concepts I lay out there, they're fact. They're backed with data and history. Don't put your head back in the sand. Accept it as truth. And accept that you need to reevaluate your survival plan of action. Okay, that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a thing because you've built all these plans, and someone told you that you could build a 6-foot fence in suburbia, and you know, spray paint your doors and windows, and nobody's ever going to know that you know you're the only one on the block that's not getting skinny. Okay, that's not going to happen. They're going to figure it out, and they're eventually going to come by force. Yeah, you might, you know, you're still Team 6, okay, you defend your non-bulletproof house, you know, the first 4 or 5 gunfights. Eventually, you're going to die, and they're going to eat your food. So take what I'm saying serious. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be comfortable, but make the necessary steps to wrap your brain around it, then make your plans accordingly.
Yes. So tell everyone how to get up with you, how to get your book. When's your audiobook coming out? All that, all the good stuff.
Sure. So, I've also got the next book. I know everybody's been bugging me on the next book in my EMP fiction series. That's been a long time coming. That's 85% done. So my plan here is March 1st. I'm gonna crush on the fiction book and try and get that done in the month of March. I've got a lot of different podcasts. I'm working on the Audible for this. I'm trying to get the report out. To put on Amazon, but you can find all my books on Amazon. They're all available in paperback, Kindle, and Audible. This one's not quite ready for, you know, still going through the process. I have another fiction book coming out. If you want to check out my website, griddownconsulting.com. If you want to follow me on Instagram or Twitter, it's at griddownprepper, and Facebook and Patreon is at Jonathan Hollerman. So I'm also on Patreon a lot. If you're a paid subscriber, you know, we do giveaways, and I do regular live Q&As and current events updates. And, you know, we put out a lot of different checklists and stuff that I, you know, that's kind of how I address the people that fall.
And just for the record, we may have a guy sitting in his bunker right now going, wow, I really like what Jonathan Hollerman's doing. And, you know, I'll buy his books, but he said he's on some kind of commission that is trying to change things. How could they get up with you there and make a donation or help you out in a way that could really impact America with your voice to the congressman and to, you know, to people in power? How can they do that?
Thank you so much for throwing that out there. So, I am the Deputy Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. We do not take private donations. We have to keep that separate because there's we petition a lot with congressmen and senators stuff. So that I don't know all the ins and outs of how that works with 501c3s, but we don't take private donations. If you can afford to help. So here's the thing. This is not a David and Goliath fight, okay? This is like a Goliath and like a carpenter ant fight. Okay. The amount of money the utility industry has, I mean, they crush us at every corner. And every single person, I don't get paid for. So any of the stuff I do, you know, traveling, this is all stuff I'm volunteering, trying to save the American population. Okay. I don't get paid for any of it. None of these guys do. Okay. If you can donate some money, even a little bit, Michael, maybe, is the tip of the spear. That dude is fighting the utility industry in the court system by himself with his wife's grocery money. Like, go to his Grid Security Now, Michael Mabee. That's M-A-B-E-E. Definitely donate to him. And then the other big one I would definitely recommend is Secure the Grid Coalition. Secure the Grid Coalition. Colonel Tommy Waller runs that organization. They're kind of the national head of everything we do. He's the helmsman. He's the captain of our boat, driving everything, coordinating everything, putting everything together. So definitely, if you have the ability, both those, at least Tommy's, the Secure the Grid Coalition, I know that's tax deductible because it's a 501c3. Michael, maybe you're just helping out a brother, a fellow brother fighting the fight. So definitely help those guys out if you can donate. And shoot some emails. There's lots of stuff that you could probably get involved to help. We're trying to organize through the back end of David Tice's Grid Down, Power Up. Make sure you watch that documentary.
I'll put that in the links. It'll be linked in there.
They have a C-suite. They have a take action. They have a whole committee. Put your email in there. I know they're trying to organize. We need to organize some people marching, to be honest with you. We need people, meeting some of these utility executives as they come out of their offices saying, hey, put a camera in their face, start asking them some tough questions. We need to be doing some like Project Veritas level stuff to make a splash, because right now there's no pressure on anybody. They don't have to act. And everyone's like, well, how could we be here? And how could, because there's nobody beating down the doors of their politicians saying, hey, do something about this. We're all right. Going to die,
So everything you're talking about, if you'll send me the links, I have all your information, but if you want me to put in, and I'll put all in the show notes, when we post this, thanks for coming on, and thanks for fighting the fight. Thanks for telling us the truth as well. I mean, it's hard to sometimes get the truth, and everyone go out and buy. You got to have Survival Theory 1. I mean, you just have to. It's a great book. I'm not saying you don't need it for Survival Theory 2, because they're separate books. But number one is great. Number two is great. So buy both of them, and then buy them for your friends. And but you guys need to buy that. I do. I'm going to close this out, Greg, if you don't mind, and Jonathan, if you want to stay on, that'd be great. I do want to stay on. Yeah,
this
is the
most important thing we haven't talked about. Is this is all scary stuff. This is things that can really. And people ask me all the time, like, how do you like? I live a happy life. I'm smiling right now. I'm going to go downstairs. I got my wife and kids, and we're going to play some games before we tuck them into bed. I live a very happy, fulfilled life. I am not stressing this one bit. I don't have all my plans where I need them to be, but at the end of the day, we have a sovereign God, and we have, put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ. And,
amen.
When this horrible thing happens, he will sustain you through the storm, our eyes are too earthbound. We were talking about this the other day too. I tell people all the time, like everyone's like, I'm going to lose my house. I was like, who cares? If you've got faith in Jesus Christ, this time you have on earth is like this much. And
agreed.
Eternity goes on forever. Our eyes should be focused on what we're doing for the kingdom, and how we're living our life and our sanctification process. And the crazy stuff that happens down here on earth, it seems so important to us now. None of this stuff matters in the scheme of eternity. So don't prep in fear. It's easy. A lot of preparedness people on the internet, they use fear to get people to prep. That's why I said, go through the process, wrap your brain around this whole situation, pray about it, and make wise decisions. Don't just run out there and start throwing money at stuff.
Yes. Amen to that. So Bible verse came to my mind. It's John 14:1. It says, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. And see, that was Jesus telling everyone, hey, don't be troubled. God is still in control. Believe in me. And then you'll be fine. And so when we say, one thing I told, I think it was, I had, Engineer 775 on.
Dave Hunt.
What'd you say?
Dave Hunt.
Scott Hunt. And we were talking about preparedness and everything, and it was our Christmas show. And I said, the funny thing is we could have all things prepared on earth and go through a nuclear bomb and survive. But you prolong your earthly life is all you do. You got to have treasures in heaven and trust in Jesus. That's how you truly get saved from a nuclear bomb and other things. So I'm going to close this out.
We're also- Hey, Dave Forrest, we've also talked, though, but we're also called to provide and protect for our families, too.
Absolutely.
You look at Noah, you can go through all through the Old and New Testament. We're called to be good stewards of the time and the finances and the resources that God gives us. I think, especially as fathers out there, you have a responsibility. If you know this is a real threat, if you know this is a real risk, I know you've got car insurance. I know you've got house insurance and probably fire insurance, and flood insurance, and dental insurance. And you have all these insurances for a rainy day. There's, you know, treat this the same way. And, you know, don't be that guy 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in with your wife and kids starving to death, or your husband and kids. You know, I want to be gender, you know, free here. Like, don't be that person saying, man, I should have listened. You know, I didn't take this serious. You know, they're going to be looking to you for leadership, and you got to make wise decisions. I'm sorry. I'll let you go ahead and move.
No. In fact, I mean,
great.
We usually close in prayer. Would you mind close us in prayer?
I don't.
Okay.
All right. Let's pray, guys. Hey, dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you so much for this great group of guys. It's been such a blessing to know them for the years. Lord, we pray for our president. We pray for our country. It looks so dark. It looks so bleak. But in perspective, Lord, there have been many times in Christian history where, you know, Christians have been used as human torches in Nero's garden. You know, we are not there yet. We may get there yet. We just ask that you give us the strength to do what needs to be done. In the natural, trust you for the supernatural and the things that we cannot control. You are a sovereign God, Lord. We praise you and we thank you so much for the ability to live in such an amazing country, just an incredible country where we don't go hungry, where we don't, you know, go through the suffering that most of the third world does. We don't take that for granted. We are overwhelmingly blessed in our lives today. Lord, help us to take these threats and the things that we talked about serious, to not stick our head in the sand and ignore the threats, but also not to live in fear, Lord. We thank you so much for sending your son to die on the cross for our sins. And I just want to give you all the praise and all the glory. And we thank you so much for being such a great and wonderful God. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen.
Amen.
Hey, thanks for coming on with us
to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.